Today on Wings, the Aunt Jemima Struggle.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
On June 17, 2020, Quaker Oats announced the removal of Aunt Jemima's name and image from their syrup and pancake mix, claiming Aunt Jemima's origins are based on a racial stereotype. The late Professor Beverly Robinson, who taught African American theater history at UCLA, argued against that very erasure. From the Wings Archive, 1994, here is her speech on Aunt Jemima and Eliza.
Beverly Robinson was a computer engineer at the University of California, Los Angeles, when she met a woman who changed her life profoundly.
In 1968, Aunt Jemima was coming to UCLA. And I said, I cannot believe that in the wake of trying to establish black studies, in the wake of trying to get an acknowledgement of the Asian American studies, the Chicano studies, and American Indian studies, that this campus would have the nerve to bring Aunt Jemima. See, I was ready to seriously start a movement. And when I got to the classroom where she was speaking, I saw a rather pleasingly plump woman whose skin in all interpretations was fair walk past the seats in that classroom and begin to unfold her story. And it was so moving to me that I said that if I ever had a chance to go back to school, that I would not only research the history of Aunt Jemima, but begin to redefine the heroines within my own cultural background. And I realized at that time that there were two major images of African American women that have affected the world. One is Eliza, and the other one is Aunt Jemima. I'm talking about historical images. And when I finally went to the University of Pennsylvania to work on my doctorate, one summer I came home and I got a call from this woman, Edith Wilson, who played Aunt Jemima, and she said, I think you better come to Chicago quick. And I knew that I had to get to Chicago to record her words because she was very ill at the time. She said, well, look in the basement, you might find something. And I went in the basement, trying to go through some boxes, and I heard a noise that scared me to death. Because, you know, the first thing I thought about was like, Richard Wright thought the rat was here. And I picked up a brick, and I saw something move, and I did like this, and saw it was a kitten. And I said, oh my gosh, you know, I said, oh, if I had to smash this little kitten, I would have been out of it. And when I went to put the brick back down, I saw an envelope. It was addressed to Edith Wilson, and it was from W.H. Goodall in an envelope dated January the 5th, 1943, 5 p.m., Kentucky. And this is what it said. Your great-grandma was Maria Wright, a tall, well-proportioned woman of more than ordinary natural intelligence. She was a slave in the Breckinridge family, talking about Vice President Breckinridge. And her good looks caused her to be a favorite with her master, which resulted in her becoming the mother of two mulatto children, a boy and a girl, named John and Eliza. The latter was my mother and your grandmother. John and Eliza had all the features of the Breckinridges and all of their loquacity. Now, this is the letter he wrote. This is none of my words. Eliza lived with Mrs. J.A. Breckinridge, which is John A. Breckinridge, in Louisville. As she grew up, she heard tales of slaves escaping to Canada by the Underground Railroad. In 1852, and I checked that date, it's actually 1850, Jenny Lynn came to Louisville and sang at the Mozart Hall at 4th and Jefferson. Now, if you don't know who Jenny Lynn is, Jenny Lind was considered the Swedish Nightingale. She was an opera singer that gave up opera to go sing on the riverboats, Mississippi riverboats. She could make a lot more money. My mother went there to attend to the young people, and while there she made the acquaintance of George Rogers, who was a barber and musician on steamboats playing between Louisville and New Orleans. Rogers became enamored of Eliza, and on every trip to the city they met clandestinely. According to the slave custom, they jumped the broom, were married, and as a result their son, James, was born. Shortly thereafter, Rogers put into Eliza's head the desire to escape by the Underground Railroad to free soil. They traveled on foot by night and hid in the daytime till they reached Covington, Kentucky. At that time, the Ohio River separating Cincinnati from Covington was frozen over, and it was here that they crossed the river upon ice floes. At that time, Mrs. Harriet Beecher Stowe was staying with some friends in Cincinnati, and the story reached her and was incorporated in her novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin. After Eliza and George reached Windsor, Canada, they lived there a while until after the emancipation, when they returned to the U.S., but drifted apart, he going back to Nashville and she coming to Louisville. Eliza met a man named Frank Goodall, my father, and they were married. She became the mother of 17 children, having had twins 3 times. She died in Louisville in her 52nd year. At the time of her death, many papers carried the story of her escape from slavery. When Edith passed, I tried to give the letter to the Special Collections at UCLA, and thank God they did not want it. So I still own the letter. Aunt Jemima, for me and maybe many of you, had always conjured caricatures of African-American lifestyles. These images were reflected in children's books, The Little Black Sambo and 10 Little Niggers, in trade cards, newspaper ads and comics, and as trademarks for various food products, including Aunt Jemima Ready Mixes, Nigger in the Canefield Syrup, Nigger Head Oysters, Uncle Ben's Rice, Mammy Yams, as well as the trademark for Gold Dust Soap Powder, just to name a few. The stereotypical imagery was so common from the latter part of the 1880s to as late as the 1940s, until it has been suggested, and most people didn't realize, that the caricatures degraded African Americans. And some people, including African Americans, collected them and laughed privately in their own homes about some of these images. One of the images which has flourished from the mid-1800s to today is that of Aunt Jemima. If you read the history from Brands, Trademarks, and Goodwill, they say that there's a woman named Nancy Green that gave life to Aunt Jemima, and there was never any person named Aunt Jemima. The author concludes that the public invention of pancakes with the invention of 2 St. Joseph, Missouri men and the trademark Aunt Jemima was a product of early day advertising men. Now, the product of invention is germane, but it overlooks the essential upon which African Americans record their history, and that's by way of the spoken word, the oral history tradition. This woman, Edith Wilson, started talking about where Aunt Jemima really came from, that early many African Americans knew that there was a Jemima. Jemima was a young, enslaved girl who was put in charge of the children. When the Civil War came along, she heard a knock at her door, and it scared her. She had her own cabin. There were 2 Northern soldiers who were lost, and they were hungry. They were in the Civil War. She fixed griddle cakes for them, and one of the soldiers said, "When I get back, when this war is over, and I get back to Minnesota, my people have a meal, and I'm going to send for you, because we're going to package this." And that's exactly what he did. Jemima herself never had any children. Her nieces and nephews for years owned incredible stock in this early company, which later became the Quaker Oaks Company. Edith Wilson was hired in Los Angeles as an actress to play the part of Aunt Jemima from 1948 to 1966 for the Quaker Oaks Company. Up until that time, Aunt Jemima had been played by white women in blackface. on the Beulah show, Beulah runs into and has a friend named Jemima, Aunt Jemima, and that was played by a man on radio, a white male. Then we have a woman named Tess Gardella, who's an Italian white vaudevillian actress who was in the production of Showboat, who played Aunt Jemima character from 1928 to 1935. And I'm going to read to you what appeared in court. A suit over the use of the name Aunt Jemima was filed in the Supreme Court by Tess Gardella, stage, screen, and radio singer, who asked $200,000 from the National Broadcasting Company, General Foods Incorporated, and the Log Cabin Products Company. The plaintiff says that she has been known since 1920 under the name of Aunt Jemima and asserts that the defendant's singer imitating her is an imposter. So in other words, here she is impostering and playing the part of a black woman. Now we have a black woman playing the part of a black woman who is said to be an imposter, therefore she's to be sued. Edith had heard of Tess Gardella, but said that she was a lot more plumper than Edith was. And at that time, Edith weighed around 190 to 200 pounds, and she was about 5'7". When Edith began as Aunt Jemima in the 40s, she went from the Elks clubs to a lot of private clubs raising money for needy children and for orphanages. She raised millions of dollars, and during that entire time period, she never once made a pancake. During the entire time, I knew Edith Wilson. She could not make pancakes. She was an actress. And what Edith did is that she had white women actually doing the stirring, actually showing you how to pour it on the grill and what have you, as she sung the songs of Stir Lightly, Aunt Jemima's Buckwheat Mix, and all the other songs, and she would talk about Aunt Jemima pancakes, because after all, if the mother-in-law is coming, you can fix pancakes for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. They wanted her to wear a yellow kerchief, a yellow apron, and a red and white dress, and of course, the kerchief was tied in the front, because most early African-American women in this country, especially during slavery, introduced the concept of covering the hair when you're dealing with pots. What they put Aunt Jemima out to do was to advertise for the pancakes. She said, I had to participate in Pancake Day and Pancake Celebration. People in town would come and eat pancakes that day for a small amount, and they would bring their children. I worked many a pancake festival, had many letters thanking me from the children, the mothers, and the fathers. It was so popular that she was even put on a radio show as well as on television. Now, when she got on the radio show, there was a big dispute about how they wanted the radio and the television commercials done. She said that they walked her down to the studio and gave, and I'll use her first person, gave me a speech teacher to tell me how to talk. They had a girl there who was nervous saying, oh, I don't know what to do. My husband's mother is coming over, and she loves pancakes, and I'd like to make her some pancakes, but she's so hard to please, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, don't worry, honey, I'm here. I'll help you make the pancakes. I'll show you how to make pancakes your mother-in-law will adore. You don't have to worry, as they will always come scrumptious and light. The girl had played it up so, and I came in very softly and calmly, as I had learned to do in my drama classes. The producer bawled me out for not being bossier. He really laid me out, and I asked him, how can I, as upset as that girl is, boss her around? He wanted someone who was loud with a sharp tongue, said, don't worry, you can make some Aunt Jemima pancakes. The man from Quaker Oaks came into the booth and asked to hear what I had done. He listened and said, marvelous, that's just what I want. Edith, I'll buy this. He fired the producer and let their prior Aunt Jemima go, and I started appearing on Tom Moore's Ladies Be Seated show after that. She sung songs. You ought to bake a home good cake, a cake that's easy and fun to make. Just take out Aunt Jemima cake mix and you'll find this is a home good cake mix. Or she had a jingle. I'm Aunt Jemima with a scrumptious pancake ready mix. Buy Aunt Jemima pancakes today. And when folks rave over them, remember, you baked the cake, so you take the compliments. Edith was good at this. There was Aunt Jemima's whistle song, Aunt Jemima's happy song. There was Aunt Jemima's buckwheat mix song. There was the regular Aunt Jemima song, talking about how she was from the South, Aunt Jemima's stirred lightly song. But then, because of the popularity, we had a show called The Aunt Jemima's Divorce Case, and Who is the Husband of Aunt Jemima? It hurt Edith a lot, because then people started trying to sing these songs at a lot of burlesque shows and revues. And what it says is, in the black folks' history, there's an unsolved mystery that's puzzling all the wise heads of the race. The question now arises, and it causes some surprises, but we all must face the cold facts in the face. It seems that Aunt Jemima, as a girl, was a good timer, and that's just where the trouble all begins. Our parsons' flock all tell us that she had a lot of fellas, as she was the mammy of the Goldust twins. Now, who was the husband of Aunt Jemima, the mammy of the Goldust twins? It's a sin she was black, we have proof of the facts, he left the kids to wash away his sins. But whoever he was, it is a problem quite, I bet he got his pancakes morning, noon, and night. Now who was the husband of Aunt Jemima, the mammy of the Goldust twins? From most every city there was some committee sent to investigate the morals of this dame. They reported she was lacking, but they needed proper backing, for they wouldn't dare to mention any name. Some thought that all the glory should have gone to old Bill Story, and then some thought old Pop Hampton was the man. The folks along the street said 'twas the man of cream of wheat. Then some thought it was the man o' ham I am. Now who was that? The husband of Aunt Jemima, the mammy of the Goldust twins. When she was invited to defend her position as Aunt Jemima, she reminded people that she told the real story of this young girl, and that pancakes had been invented by early African-American women, and that really prior to the existence of the African presence in both Europe and here in this country, the whole concept of that type of making griddle cakes and frying was unknown to the culinary cultures, including American Indians. She also told stories that many early African Americans brought with them. Most of those stories that were later recorded in a book in the 1850s called The Tales of Br'er Rabbit. And they were stories that Edith had heard as a child. By the 1960s, with the Civil Rights Movement going on, Aunt Jemima became a real case in point as an image that we did not want to see, because the only two major images of blacks in this country during this time of the late 50s, early 60s, was a little boy called Little Black Sambo and the Sambo restaurants that started in Santa Barbara, California, and Aunt Jemima on the pancake mix. It didn't make any difference that Aunt Jemima was showing up in limousines, was the first one to be in a helicopter when the helicopter was invented, the first, topless car, convertible. Aunt Jemima was the first one to ride in it. They brought it to Chicago to put her in it. Again, raising money. The controversy was so heavy until people began to picket the Aunt Jemima pancake houses. And the NAACP became very, very adamant about getting rid of Aunt Jemima. So much so until there were stabbings, that is, knives were being stabbed into pancake boxes in stores across America saying, let's get rid of this image. And I think it's only fair to tell you that not only did the picture on the pancake box basically use Edith Wilson's image, but what they did is they just broadened the smile and darkened the face. For collectors of the Aunt Jemima memorabilia, the images may show how she's been lightened up over the years to make her more acceptable to black customers. And I'll pass this around because this is Edith playing now as Aunt Jemima. In the 60s, she's the one that turned the head wrap from being tied in the front to being tied in the back as part of the 60s movement. The problem was the ironic representation was one of emancipating the white American housewife and not one necessarily of paying tribute to the African-American woman and her culinary skills that she had contributed not only to this country, but basically to the world. The Illinois chapter of the NAACP said that Aunt Jemima will have to stay in the kitchen when she visits Rock Falls next month. Miss Wilson was to have given a 15-minute entertainment program in the Rock Falls schools as a prelude to her appearance on November the 7th. However, the school programs were canceled as a result of letters from Raymond E. Harth, Chicago lawyer and the president of the Illinois NAACP. An attempt was made to win NAACP approval to have Miss Wilson appear in ordinary street clothes instead of her traditional kitchen garb, but Harth said Aunt Jemima, in whatever garb she may appear, is a stereotype carryover from a part of our national shame which all thinking Americans, and particularly heads of education systems, should be attempting to rectify. Harth said that the Rock Falls schools employ no Negro teachers to offset the image reflected by Aunt Jemima. The NAACP was launching a successful collective effort, and in the 1960s, with attempts in Mississippi and Alabama to register blacks to vote, the Sambo restaurants were being picketed, and Aunt Jemima did not have a good image at the time. Aunt Jemima was not the only image attacked by the NAACP. They also attacked the Amos and Andy Show, as some of you may know. For some, the idea that Aunt Jemima was an aspersion on African Americans fell as flat as a pancake, and it prompted the mayor of Florence, Alabama, to send a telegram to Quaker Oaks in 1963. He said that press releases indicate that you are encountering difficulties in your proposed new development in the state of New York. In Florence, Alabama, we respect and revere your Aunt Jemima trademark and the product that it represents. Therefore, on behalf of all our citizens, both white and colored, we invite you to place a plan in Florence where we offer you an excellent site, tax exemption, TVA electricity, and a quality of labor to whom you will be proud. Aunt Jemima was such a controversy that in most American newspapers from 1963 to 65 had at least 5 articles about the controversy of Aunt Jemima. Finally, Edith Wilson wrote a letter to the NAACP. I am writing in reference to your letter of December the 31st of 1964. The NAACP has done a tremendous job helping our people in legal matters where there are many things they could be helping correct rather than constantly pressuring this one job where the person involved does not cook but only plays the part that others have played in other races and no comments are made. For example, Molly Goldberg. Jewish people do not ask her to stop being herself, and no one has asked the Beverly Hillbillies not to work. Why must we be so critical when Aunt Jemima is doing nothing to ridicule the race and conducts herself as a lady at all times? There are many others within our race who are more in need of correction than Aunt Jemima. Furthermore, am I to be denied the right to make a living because a few misguided persons in my race set themselves as censors over the roles an actress plays? Have you or others bothered to find out what the program is all about? Only those in our race have used the name of Aunt Jemima to mean someone that is not desirable. Are you aware that Aunt Jemima should mean as much to Negroes as Chef Boyardee does to the Italians or Louis of the Waldorf does to the French? I could understand being sensitive if, as a race, we had no women and men meeting the challenge in all walks of life. Since when is cooking a disgrace? It is an honorable profession, and many cooks are more highly paid than many of our educators. Many of our mothers cooked to give us educations, and now some of us are denying rather than thanking them. Also, no one has ever given me a valid reason why we are so sensitive about a character being played when the character is fulfilling a humanitarian mission by raising funds for youth activities, helping children in need to have their eyes examined, and buying glasses for them and giving them scholarships to further their educations, thereby producing more capable citizens. These youngsters whom we are helping are some of the ones who will be able to make the problem of complete acceptance much more simpler. Aunt Jemima built a monument to herself with pancakes, and the advertisement admits that she was a Negro. She is as American as ham and eggs, and Aunt Jemima pancakes are part of my racist past that is being kept as a leading product, a fact we cannot deny. We all want to move into the big white stream, but if we take none of our own accomplishments with us, it will be as parasites taking away without contributing anything worthwhile. I have a contract, and you ask me to break this contract, and yet offer me no option, alternate compensation, only threats of being boycotted and or picketed. Are you being fair? I don't feel I should be asked to destroy an image of my past and copy an image of someone else. Please know it would be impossible for you to be more proud of being a Negro than I. I only wish this letter could be sent to all NAACP offices, for they are so misinformed. Though Edith Wilson and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People may have once been at odds over the Aunt Jemima controversy, she never withdrew her lifetime membership from the NAACP. Over the years, she donated her time performing to assist in fundraising. She was not bitter, and jokingly she suggested in a 1978 interview that I did with her that the next time the NAACP asked her to perform, she ought to, quote, show up in her Aunt Jemima costume. Her dream, which revolved around her cash flow as an actress, was to open a home for children and retired entertainers. By aligning the two establishments, the children could learn from the retired masters, and the masters could make their final maturation, teaching their artistries and leaving histories to the young. Edith's dream was an ancient tutelage tradition which American society has not strongly supported. Edith Wilson once told me that she believed that children possess a natural open-heartedness. They do not see color as a societal racial image which is learned, but they are capable of seeing love in the images that make them happy. And Aunt Jemima apparently offered the sincerity and the image of love, probably very much like Big Bird, Miss Piggy, Santa Claus, and E.T. when it hit the market. The major difference between Aunt Jemima and these others is that no other human female image obtained such an infant popularity rating in America, except maybe the never-seen fairy godmother. We need to re-examine our heroines. Females who really care about others have something which we can hold on to that has oral tradition. It's a wisdom that we can use and give to others regardless of hair textures, lip sizes, skin hues, and booty sizes. It's good wisdom.
The late Professor Beverly Robinson taught African American theater history at the University of California, Los Angeles. Her speech was recorded for Wings by Jude McGee in 1994. Quaker Oats did remove Aunt Jemima's name and image 26 years later. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thanks to your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.